After 10 o'clock, we will call this meeting of the Property Tax Relief Division and Local Sales Tax Division to order. Today is Local Government Aid Day. So, welcome. It's refreshing. I remember certain years in the past where I don't ever know if there was an LGA bill heard, much less having a day. So this is great. We have all sorts of different plans. And all of these bills today will be laid over for possible inclusion. And if there is money available for property tax relief and local government aid, we'll be looking at all of these. And, you know, it may be a, you know, whatever comes out of all these things. So we will put all of that together, but do appreciate everyone being here. I think the way we will operate today is hear the bill. Then I presume there will be a few testifiers for each bill, and then if any members, when they get here, have any questions. We do have Ms. Dalton here to answer any questions of how all this. She is the real guru when it comes to local government aid. I have to say that it was past 11 o'clock last night. She was still doing the runs on these LGA things. So thank you so much, Pat, for your work on all of that, which replicates what our staff does, everyone does here. So with that, we can't move anything until we get a quorum. So we've got Representative Hansen here. If you would present House File 2852.
Thank you, Chairman Marquardt and members of the committee. I have two bills this morning, and I'm pleased to be the first ones on Local Government Aid Day. As you know, I represent metro suburban districts, but we have two small towns in my district, Lilydale and Mendota, and they have some of the similar needs as small towns in greater Minnesota, but they're kind of tucked in along the river. Mendota will be celebrating its 150th anniversary this year at Lilydale. Many of you may drive through Lilydale if you come through on the freeway. I have the city clerk for both communities, Joan Olin, is here. She serves as in that capacity for Lilydale and Mendota. And I think we're starting off with House File 2852 to provide local government bridge funding for 2 years for $150,000 to the city of Lilydale to help assist with some of their budget needs. I believe you, Ms. Olin, will talk a little bit about the tax capacity, the population, and some of the needs that they have in Lilydale. So with that, Ms. Olin.
Okay, very good. If you would please state your name.
My name is Joan Olin. I'm the city administrator for the city of Lilydale.
Please
proceed. And do it in a few minutes. With the LGA with Lilydale, we have a high tax capacity, but 41% of our city at this time is held in a TIF tax increment financing. We had Sheely gravel pits, which contributed maybe $30,000 in taxes, three of which went to the city. In the year 2000, we were approached by a developer, wanted to build Stonebridge development, which includes several small commercial areas along with high-income residential. In order to do that, we had to put the money into TIF. Because of the large amount we had to put into TIF, our taxes, we're not getting that much back from the residents. So we're asking for relief until 2011 to help with our infrastructure, different types of water management issues that we have, until such time as TIF is paid off and are levied more appropriate for what our housing truly is.
Thank you.
Our population of Lilydale is 736. And our tax capacity is $1,118,000, which rates, I did a rating of 670 cities, which is a population of 2,500 or less. Going from the lowest to the highest, we rate 573. Our rating for LGA is 20. Or I'm sorry, 60. So there are basically 610 cities who receive more LGA than we do. Although our population, our current tax levy, and our capacity is about in the middle, we are one of the lowest that receive LGA. And I have met with Pat Dalton, and we kind of went through why that is, how that came about, and both of these cities kind of slipped through the cracks as far as trying to help with some of the LGA proposals at this time. They are more for the greater Minnesota area than the seven county metro area.
I also have Marilyn Lundberg, who's on the city council, and she could address some of the budget cutting and,
okay,
and proposals that they've had in the city of Lilydale.
All right. Councilmember Lundberg, please proceed.
My name is Marilyn Lundberg, and I'm on the Lilydale City Council. And the Lilydale City Council is relatively new. Four of the, including the mayor, were newly elected in 2006. And what we discovered is we inherited a huge operating deficit, and the city, unknown, I think, to all the residents and the new board, was operating by borrowing money, and that's what we've had to do because of the budget shortfalls. We have also cut wherever we could. We've gone through the budget we could, but we're right in the metro area. We need police and fire services, and as Joan said, with the large amount of money going into TIF, there isn't much money left in the budget for the necessities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I do see, looking at some stats, you have about, really, about 45% of your tax base is either in TIF or fiscal disparity.
Yes, yes.
I see.
It's a very high fiscal disparity.
I'm using the LMC book again here tonight. I have to give full disclosure here. So. Wonderful addition here, you guys.
Yes.
Jim, you do an excellent job with this. I use it all the time. It's always wait for September to come by and then see. Ms. Dalton, as you know, some of the formula mixes and so forth, what, in looking at Mendota and Lilydale, is there some unique things there that in the formula that, or is it just their is it their need factor or their revenue ability to raise, or what? Is there anything you can add?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in the case of Lilydale, they did actually have a lot of new housing because of this TIF district. And age of housing stock is one of the factors in the formula. And because they have a lot of new housing, their percentage of housing built before 1940 is relatively low. So they tend to be a little lower on the need scale than the average small city. In addition, just generally speaking, the metropolitan area has higher tax capacities per capita just because land and buildings are more valuable in, or their values have been increasing faster in the metro area than they have in our state. And so they tend to have a much higher tax capacity, even if it doesn't necessarily, on a per capita basis. But as she said, a lot of their tax capacity is currently in the TIF district, and they won't be able to actually realize it in their general fund budget until 2 years when it comes off, when it goes back on the regular roll.
All right. I guess anything else you care to add, Representative, on this?
Just, Ms. Olin is the staff. For both cities, they contract with Mendota Heights for police and fire. And so both cities have some new restaurants and bars. So there are increased needs for police and fire, and so they've both cities have had that additional cost that's been there, and I believe Councilor Lundberg that Lilydale has raised their levy.
Yes, we've been raising our levy every year,
and our police and fire for both cities is in excess of 50% of what our budget is.
Sure.
Okay.
And we have no control over those costs.
Very good. Representative Hanson, would you like to do House File 2854 at this time? And we've heard maybe some, and then we can open.
Okay,
and we do have a quorum, so I'm going to move House File 2852 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the property tax omnibus bill. And we'll take a vote on that, because I think we're probably done with that. All those in favor say aye. No, we don't take a vote on that. What am I doing? All right. We'll just lay that over. Representative Hanson, you want to go 2854?
2854 is for the city of Mendota. And just to contrast with Lilydale, we were looking at a two-year bridge funding. With Mendota is a smaller city, older housing stock, much smaller city. And we're looking at a 10-year commitment there. And I would maybe just ask Councilor Brian Mielke to say what the total budget is for Mendota.
Actually, I'm going to
jump
in.
Okay,
Ms.
Olin, please.
If I take a minute of your time real quickly to contrast the two cities. Lilydale has higher income residents, definitely an up-and-coming city. Mendota is the oldest city in the state of Minnesota. It's not Stillwater's best, but very low income. We still have trailer houses. We have three decrepit, and our housing survey of three decrepit homes, older population. Our population is 188 people. Our tax capacity is $290,000, which rates us at, out of, again, the 670 cities I surveyed out of the nice cluster, we're 284. Our net levy is 115,000, and that puts us at 337 out of the 670. Our population, again, is the 188, which puts us at 43. Our local government aid, in contrast, was 648 lowest. So there's only 22 people or 22 towns that get less than us, although we are by far one of the poorest cities. And again, we need to help with the infrastructure. Most of our residents and businesses are hooked up to sewer. We still have some that aren't. The majority are not even hooked up to water. We just don't have the money at this, you know, at $115,000 to do our infrastructure. We just don't have it. And our local government aid last year was $1,700. And again, it had disappeared, but I met with Pat, and our pre-1940 housing is there, but because of some of the new businesses, which are basically two restaurants, and we're such a small, we're only 65 acres, that raised one of the part of the formula. We basically, as Pat told me, we slipped through the cracks of the LGA formula.
Mm-hmm.
And so we definitely need to help just to have infrastructure, just to have water, just to have sewer.
And Mendota also has the Sibley House historical site, and we have the oldest church.
We have the Faribault, Dupuis, Sibley Home. We have our own city hall. And we are also celebrating our 150th anniversary. We actually were created before the state of Minnesota.
As a Minnesota history teacher, Representative Hanson is going to give me a tour of that oldest city. And
I would love to take
a seat. I'm looking forward to that very much.
I can show you history like you've never heard. It's a very interesting city. We're very proud of it, but it's, again, a very poor city.
Yeah. Council member, have you got some comments to add?
Brian Mielke, city councilman. Joan covered it all very well. I just want to reemphasize that so much of our budget goes towards public safety, and we have so much infrastructure needs. A majority of our residents are relying upon their wells, and we would like to change that and get the infrastructure in place to correct a water main loop that's not currently connected, and it's about 60% of our budget goes towards public safety, and with the Axles and Monkey 13s, the two bars and restaurants in our town, that stresses us to the max. I mean, we're very, you know, Main Street's very busy, and the police attention has increased, and I think our budget towards police is going to definitely go up as they need to direct their attention towards Mendota. So, you know.
You know,
I just make one more point, that I will be. What a town like Mendota has that's unique to us is we are in the 7-county metro area, which has a lot of restrictions. We have to comply with the Met Council, comply with quite a few things, whereas the greater Minnesota cities receive more LGA but don't have requirements put on them.
Yeah, and you know, Ms. Dalton, as the council member had mentioned also that you probably have a lot of activity, a lot more, based on your population. When I was mayor in Dilworth, we had a population of about 3,000, but we had a Highway 10 and right next to Fargo-Moorhead. We had a lot more activity for police activity going through than a town of 3,000 located 100 miles away from, you know, kind of a... And yet, you don't get any, being under 2,500, you don't get any of, like, the accident factor, things that try to measure this overburden, so to speak, on some of those things, and so you do fall through the cracks a little bit there. So, any questions for either one of these bills by any of the members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize for arriving late here. Perhaps I missed this. Can you tell me, do you receive your public safety resources from another city, or is this strictly a...
Yeah, we contract through Mendota Heights.
Okay. Melfi,
yeah. Go ahead. Mendota Heights for fire and police.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Any final comments there, Representative Hansen?
Well, I would invite not only the chair, but also members of the committee. Mendota and Lilydale are very close. If you want to see these communities and kind of the needs that they face, maybe during a break or something, we can just go across the river and take a look at the needs they face, plus the historical sites that are there. I think, and this is my first visit to this subcommittee, but we have two unique situations here with Mendota and Lilydale, and I would ask the committee to consider these needs of the two small cities of Mendota and Lilydale and try to bring them into kind of some equity with other small cities and meet their needs so that they can serve their citizens. Lilydale is a short-term fix. Mendota is more of a long-term to deal with their public safety issues and infrastructure. And I think if we can do this, this will help out both communities.
Thank you very much. And with that, I will lay over House File 2854 for possible inclusion into our omnibus bill. And thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
You bet. Next, we have House File 2567. Representative Scalzi, I have someone move that bill. Representative Loeffler moves House File 2567. And you have an amendment.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. I have House File 2567, and I have an amendment, the A1 amendment, which would fill in the blanks with the numbers that were not in the original bill.
Representative Loeffler moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion on that to get in the form of where the author would like that? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those both in A, the amendment is adopted. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm sure you've heard me talk many times about I represent 5 cities all in Ramsey County, 7 miles north of the capital here. And they received, well, at the time I got elected, they received no LGA. Zero, all 5 cities. And since then, a couple of the cities have gotten a small amount. But still, it's kind of a suburban deal. These are older suburbs. These are suburbs that are fully developed. This bill is mainly for discussion purposes, and we came up with the pre-40, changing the pre-40s housing part of the formula to the pre-70s last year when I was working with House Research trying to get some input into the LGA formula that would show how some of the smaller suburban cities are not being treated fairly or maybe are should have some change in the formula. So we changed it to pre-70s, and then we also put in the bill some added consideration for cities that are providing affordable housing through mobile home courts. The city that I live in, Little Canada, and I have the mayor of Little Canada here with me today, Bill Blazer from Little Canada, Bath City has 473 mobile home units, so they've done more than their fair share as far as providing affordable housing, but there's not a good tax base that comes from that affordable housing. So I thought that there should be some credit in the local government aid formula in the future as it's looked at. But even when we looked at the runs that my bill provided, we're seeing that there's still a lot of inequities. And I think that what we have to do in the future as we're looking at that is we have to look at cities like this who have saved money in the past, run a very tight ship. These are cities that use volunteer fire departments. They don't have community centers. They contract with the local sheriff department for police protection. So we've pinched pennies through the years. And then when you get to the LGA formula, you're sort of, you don't fit because of that. You know, the big spenders seem to fit better within the LGA formula. So anyway, we have low property wealth relative to other cities. And most of what we spend comes from our property taxes. And these cities provide basic services, 10,000 to 13,000 population. Like I say, no community centers, no full-time police department, little or no LGA. And other similar-sized cities in the area, and I don't want to name names, but they're in Ramsey County, they have community centers, full-time police departments, and they have a lot of LGA. And I just don't think it's fair. I think it's unfair taxation. So I believe that the residents of the cities that I represent are providing the tax dollars to fund the other cities who are receiving LGA. So anyway, I'll turn it over to the mayor of Little Canada, Bill Blazer, and he'll tell you his side of the story.
Good morning. Mayor Blazer, please proceed. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify this morning. And I'm probably going to say a lot of things the same as Bev did just, Representative Scalzi had just said. But I'm going to be a little bit different than your previous two bills. I'm not here this morning to ask for more money. And in fact, I'm not here to ask for any money. I'm here to say that I believe that no more dollars should be added to local government aid until the formula is changed to be less volatile and fair to all cities. No doubt some cities do need help, but I believe the present formula allocates local government aid dollars in an antiquated manner, resulting in volatile year-to-year swings, in some cases, unfair distribution. In 2003, Little Canada lost what little government aid that we received, along with about 95% of our market value homestead credit. At that point, we were quite confident that we would never see local government aid again. Last fall, while preparing our 2008 budget, we received notice that we were going to receive $225,000 in local government aid. We were so surprised that we called the state to make sure it wasn't a mistake. We were told that a number of businesses within the city had won contested market values, which in turn lowered the city's taxable market value enough so that Little Canada received local government aid. But we were also told not to count on any local government aid for next year. The $225,000 is over 10% of our levy. It is extremely difficult for our staff, or any staff for that matter, to try to budget with year-to-year volatile swings like that. This year we received money we never expected, and St. Paul, a city of definite need, got a $3 million cut. It's tough to figure how that works out. You're probably asking, if he doesn't want more money, why is he here? I'm here mainly because I'm tired of our residents subsidizing cities in our area through an antiquated local government aid formula for services that Little Canada cannot afford. I'm not an expert in local government aid, and I can't tell you whether Representative Scalzi's bill is the answer or just a step in the right direction. But I do know that something has to be done, and I believe by putting more dollars into the program without changing the formula will just make it harder to fix, especially with the state facing a $1 billion deficit. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
And I also have the city administrator here from Little Canada if there's any questions regarding
very good. Very good. Testimony. Any questions for anyone? And
And, you know, Mayor, I agree with your comments on, I mean, I think the integrity of any program is, in fact, doesn't measure need. And I think it's very important that there is an equalization factor out there. So that roughly, you know, I can feel safe in my home at roughly the same cost as anyone else in the state, regardless of my property wealth. So the question always comes is the system fair? And I think it's a lot better than it was prior to 2001 or 2003 when they revamped it, when it was based a lot on just spending and levy plus aid and those type of things, and there's 90% of it was grandfathered. Now a very, very small percent is grandfathered, and it's based on a number of need factors. Now whether or not, you know, we've heard Representative Rukavina talk about the accident factor and all these things, and his diabolical plans about his LGA by taking away street signs and stop signs and whatever. But so, and I think that's something, especially one of the last bills here, is an effort to at least try to bring as many city groups together as we can to try to come up with something. But it's never a perfect plan, and I know, I think regardless of what we come out with this year, I think what was in the tax bill last year was a study group for local government aid, and I think that's really important that we continue the talks on that. Yes, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am sympathetic to it's hard to figure out a formula that treats all the different types of cities and their unique circumstances in a way that everyone will think fairly. But I have to say, I think that the measurement of the housing pre-1940 was not so much a measurement of the housing needs as so much as the infrastructure needs. Because usually as you did a housing development, that's when you put your sewer and your water lines in and put in your streets. And so it really is partly a demand thing. And I do think there's, you know, we need to kind of look at whether our need factors really, you know, what ones do really relate to increased cost of maintenance and upkeep, and which ones, what ones don't. And I think that we need to do that. And on the affordable housing, I think that's an interesting factor. I don't know that I would preference just one type of affordable housing, but I do think that we might want to look at some point giving some credit for those who step up.
I would just like to add, too, Little Canada is a very old city. We were actually settled in 1844. And we had a lot of housing that was pre-1940s, but it's all been torn down. So what we have of those houses, they're not there anymore. There's no existing early 1890s housing. That's gone. And what we have as far as affordable housing, when you talk about the large amount of mobile home units that we have, there's very little property taxes derived from that. And the residents of those mobile home units do require services. So we provide all those services, even though there's very little property tax derived from those mobile home units, because they're mostly personal property tax. The property tax that's derived would be from the property underneath the mobile homes only. And so there's not a lot of income to the city in that system, and yet the services required are existing, and they're there. And that's fine. It's a nice affordable housing system. It's just that the other city taxpayers have to subsidize that. And when you have a city that really doesn't receive any LTA, and they're doing fine existing on their own, they like that. It's just that we have to tell that story, because as we look at the inner ring suburbs, and we don't deny the fact that St. Paul and Minneapolis have a great need for LGA, but we should be looking at these inner ring suburbs very closely to see which ones really deserve to have LGA and which ones don't.
I think we need to do that by some sort of a need factor.
Exactly.
Yep. That would determine that. Well, like closing comments here, Mayor.
I guess someday when somebody can explain to me why a city of similar size, similar population, 5 miles down the road, gets local government aid of about 80% of our total levy, then I'll shut up about local government aid.
Any other questions? If not, Representative Loeffler, did you? Was she the one who moved this one?
We'll
renewed a layover on House File 2567. Representative Skelzy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank
you. Next, House File 3510, Representative Teppan. And Representative Anderson, would you like to move House File 3510 for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill? Representative Teppan, welcome, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3510 is pretty straightforward. All it does is change the breakpoint between the two city aid LGA formulas from 2,500 in population to 5,000 in population, effective beginning with aid payments in 2009. The bill was brought to me by the city of Hanover, because even with the phase out, their aid will be significantly decreased once they hit a population of 5,000, which will obviously cause some financial problems to the city. And I know that there's all sorts of cities probably that are affected by this and would be affected by the change to this formula. And I'm no expert in LGA, of course, but it seems like the 2,500 number, of course, we've talked about this a little bit, is a bit arbitrary. And I guess all I'm asking that is the committee is looking at making changes to the formula. This is certainly something that you might want to consider. And that's all I'll say right now, and I will have Dan Buchholz, who is the city administrator for the city of Hanover, describe to you sort of what's going on in Hanover and what's going to happen once they hit that 5,000 threshold.
Very good. Mr. Buchholz, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, for allowing me to testify today. The city of Hanover has a population.
Would you say your name, please?
Oh. Daniel Buchholz.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. The city of Hanover has a population of currently, under the state demographer's estimate, of 2421. And it's anticipated, because that's a year behind, that we're going to cross that 2,500 threshold and get into the large city formula starting for aids payable in 2009. And I knew similar cities that experienced aid cuts of about 30% when they crossed this formula. I called the League of Minnesota Cities and asked them to do a quick projection of what our aid would end up being once we crossed that threshold, and they pretty much told us that we would be phased out of the LGA formula. That takes us from a current certified aid of $195,000 to approximately, it'll end up being about $15,000. This is a very difficult time for anyone to get an LGA cut. It's difficult any time that happens, but it's very difficult right now because we're starting to see declining market values within our community as a result of the housing crisis. Growth that had brought us to this point has virtually dried up and has stopped. The city has done a number of things to reduce its reliance on property tax levy. We use the joint powers law extensively to whether it's from compost to building a joint water plant with neighboring cities, contracting for sewer service, police and police protection with our counties. We've done everything that we can to reduce that. And that's shown from our tax rate declining from being one of the highest 3 years ago in both Hennepin and Wright counties to kind of being in the midpoint. With this type of LGA cut, that progress will end up being wiped out, and will be and will be going backwards. And the number one thing I hear about from our citizens is property taxes. So.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask Ms. Dalton just to explain a little bit of this phenomenon and where things are at right now in state law. Because there is a phase-in, of course, of 5 years. So, Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct. There is a five-year phase-in right now. So the first year that a city that crosses that 2,500 threshold, 80% of their need would be based on the small city formula and 20% would be on the large city formula. And that would change by 20% every year. So by the fifth year, then they're 100% on the large formula. The reason there is this cliff, and this cliff was found fairly early on, is that the small city formula tends to over-reward cities at the larger end of the population scale. So because you're dealing with cities with a population as small as 3 up to 2,500. That's a fairly large variation. And the formula doesn't have a really good fit, and everyone recognizes that it explains less than 25% of the variation in per capita spending. But what it does tend to do is it tends to really ratchet up the need the closer you get to that 2,500 mark. Once you move to the large city formula, you're probably, that formula tends to reward cities that are closer to the larger end as well, so you probably are underrepresented on need at the lowest end of the large city formula, and so you're going from being overrepresented in the small city formula for your need to underrepresented in the large city formula when you cross that cliff.
Thank you. Mr. Buchholz.
Thank you, Ms. Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the reasons why this bill is moving the threshold from 2,500 to 5,000 is that's the point when the city directly gets MSA gas tax aid for transportation. So at that point, if you experience a cut in LGA, at least you get another revenue source to come in and maybe make up for that. And yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense from that perspective.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we have any idea, if we were to make this move, how much, in fact, it would be costing the cities, since we're at a fixed amount of revenue that we're allocating between the various units here?
Representative Earhart, Ms. Dalton, go ahead, Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, there is actually a run for this bill. I would say please don't look at the last column, which is per capita change. That number is actually wrong, but everything else is correct. The very fact that Minneapolis and St. Paul are like one-third of the LGA pot. So you can get a sense of how much money is moving around by just looking at how Minneapolis and St. Paul are affected. They each lose about $1 million. I would guess there is roughly about $5 to $10 million moving around the system due to this change.
And Mr. Chairman, and I understand that the city of Minneapolis would be losing $5 to $10 million or $1 million.
I think $1 million. So you're looking at maybe $5 to $10 million out of 484 million. So it's not a huge shift, but there would be some movement around.
Mr. Chairman, I saw the mayor of Minneapolis out here, and I thought maybe he had sensed what was happening here.
Representative, he's here for another bill. He wasn't quite too concerned about this one, I don't think. So, any other Representative Lanny?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, looking through this run, I am a little bit puzzled by the continually volatility in different categories where you've got many of the cities winners, many cities losers. Is that something that would continue as this thing is fully phased in, or is that just a first year phenomenon, or can you talk about that?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, clearly the winners under the change would primarily be cities between 2,500 and 5,000 right now. And because the vast majority of money is in cities over 2,500, the losers would tend to be the larger cities in that group, which is why Minneapolis and St. Paul lose. It's why virtually all of the regional centers and major cities in upstate Minnesota lose. But yes, it's a one-time phenomenon.
Representative Lanny.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But when you look at the categories of established cities or small cities, would that change in subsequent years, or would you still see this variability that we see here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, the reason you see differences in those groups is that those groups include cities that are both under 2,500 and over 2,500 right now. Any city that's not switching formulas is probably going to see at least a small loss right now, just so you can pay for the increases to the cities between 2,500 and 5,000. But yeah, as I said, it's still basically a one-time phenomenon.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Anderson will renew her motion to lay over House File 3510 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Tepson, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks for bringing this to the table. Next, Representative Tilbury, House File 4122. Do we hear someone? Representative Dietrich, would you care to move House File 4122? Thank you so much. Representative Tilbury, and we have an amendment. We also have an amendment to move some years from 08 to 09. Representative Dietrich moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye. Those opposed, say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Tilbury, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're here this morning because this particular bill that we're putting forth, and I have some testifiers that will be available for us. The reason that we came up with this is a conceptual type idea. We didn't think LGA was distributed fairly, and we wanted to take a crack at it. A lot of times we've always had in the past where, you know, we would say this isn't fair, and people say, well, we don't know what to do and change it. So we decided to go through with some numbers and give it an honest try and what it could look like. Now, we have a couple of number pieces in there where we have from the city of Fridley, who Bill Burns I have with me, that has really helped with putting this together. He has some numbers, and then also he has some new numbers provided to us. But the first thing I do want to do, too, is compliment Pat Dalton with all the help that she has provided us with all kinds of numbers and everything. We just wouldn't be able to do anything of significance without her help. So I really appreciate that. And I wanted to kind of turn it over to my testifiers to go through this.
Very good. You please state your name and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Scott Lund, Mayor Fridley. And I'm hopeful that everyone in the room here or the committee members have a memorandum from the city of Fridley relating to our ideas and our thoughts on this. So it's a two-page letter. I won't read it, and hope that all of you have that. So rather than being redundant, I should make note, though, that on your preliminary packet here that says preliminary, that it says, note, because of time restraints, the need data used in this one was supplied by the city of Fridley, not Burnsville. So please X that, cross out the Burnsville. I just want to give you a brief history rather than being repetitive on what our thoughts are. This came about, and I want everybody in this room to understand that this is not a parochial interest. We believe firmly that this is an interest for the state of Minnesota and all the cities, not Fridley. What brought us to the forefront in looking at this was because of two things, quite frankly. The day that I was elected in November of 2000, a very restrictive addition was put on our local charter, our local constitution, which gave us the inability to significantly raise taxes as things changed. Well, that change occurred in 2003 with the major change and redo of local government aid, where the city of Fridley was planning on receiving about $2.1 million, and that went down to zero. We have come up from zero, but not to the point where we used to be. The volatility is another issue that it is very difficult for cities to plan. We're well into our budget planning for the next year when we find out if we're going to receive zero or whatever we may receive. So the volatility is a huge issue for us. We also think that as we got more and more involved in looking at local government aid, the seemingly unfairness of how local government aid is distributed, plus the volatility. So with that in mind, as a brief history, city manager here today, Bill Burns, and our finance director, and also Rob Todges from Todges Red Pass, a private accounting firm that does accounting for 30 cities in Minnesota, have been looking at this for months. We have not taken this as a light undertaking. We have spent an awful lot of time, and with that, I hope that this committee will give it serious consideration and not keep it under the counter. We want to, we think that there's meaningful reform is needed. the city of Fridley has probably several years before we're in crisis management. We cannot balance our budgets because of the shortfalls from the losses of government aid and our inability to raise taxes greatly in the city of Fridley. And yes, we have gone through the painful undertaking of reductions wherever we can find them. We wear Cliff Clavin shoes this week. So,
write that one down.
With that, I'll pass it on to the others.
Very good. Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thanks for having us here today. We appreciate the opportunity. I think my biggest concern, my name is Bill Burns, City Manager of Fridley, and my biggest concern with the current LGA legislation that was adopted in 2003 is with the variable that was used to represent municipal government need. I don't think it has any relationship to need, and I've never seen a paragraph or words that tie the year 2000 levy and LGA received by a city to their need. I don't think there's any convincing way to do that. What we're suggesting is that rather than use five demographic variables that were associated with that questionable dependent variable, we're suggesting that we use the comprehensive annual financial reports that are now readily available in the state auditor's office to determine local government need. We've had the technical assistance from Rob Todges from Todges RedPath to help us out with this exercise, and we think that many of the difficulties previously associated with using cash-based accounting, which up to recently has been the standard in the auditor's office, can be corrected with the use of expense data from the comprehensive annual financial report. As the mayor said, we are not necessarily big winners. In fact, with the data that Pat handed out today, we're losers under our own formula. Even at best case, under the data that we had up until we've used through today, we gain about $411,000 from this formula. So our main incentive here is not so much to feather our own financial nest. We'd like to do that a little bit, but our main concern is with the fairness element of the existing formula. It just isn't fair. It doesn't stand the test of honesty, and it doesn't stand the test of clarity. You as legislators can't read what we have today. At least most of you can't. I couldn't until I got deeply involved in this and understand what's going on. And I think we need a clear, fairer formula. And thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. And Representative Paymer is next. But before I call on you, we have a class to introduce here. We've got 9th and 10th grade students from Longtang Academy in Minneapolis. They're participating in the Minnesota Historical Society Capital Historic Sites Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government Tour and Education Program. So welcome very much for being here, and hopefully you'll learn a little bit about property tax relief here in this great state. So, Representative Paymer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be clear here, Representative Tilbury. So under your changes to the formula, if I'm reading the runs correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, my city would lose $7,500,000 in LGA, and the city of Minneapolis would lose $16 million. Am I reading that wrong?
Representative Tilbury, is he reading that wrong?
I don't think you're reading that wrong.
You know, one thing you also all have to remember is that any time you really make a change in the formula, you always have to add LGA dollars in. If you'll notice, the next bill adds $90 million. Because any time you change a formula, you know, you have winners or losers. So with this, you certainly see who the losers are, you know, the winners and losers. And that's why, quite frankly, if you are ever to do any type of formula change of any sort, you've got to add dollars into the formula to hold people harmless. But on any formula, there's winners and losers. So that's exactly right. With a $0 increase, you're going to see that.
I just want to make sure that we're clear about who are the losers.
Mr. Chairman, if I might add a comment.
Yeah,
that
I'm there.
To the representative's question, our change in formula that Fridley is proposing here does not
address or add any money to the current pot. And absolutely some would gain and lose from this formula, but again, we under even this formula, as the run has just been put out, Fridley becomes a loser too. Not to the extent that the larger cities do, but still, we're about fairness and transparency and ease and understanding a formula that we hopeful that will work instead of all these constant tweaks that we hear about that seem to be the buzzword.
And as we have found out with LGA formulas, what is fair for one is a loss for another, regardless of the proposals that come forward. And that's the Representative Anderson and Representative Lanning. Representative Anderson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think that you just clarified here. I was looking through the runs, and I looked at the city of Fridley and saw that you had a loss, and usually we don't have cities come forward and take a hit. So at first I thought the runs were wrong, but thank you for clarifying that for me.
And Mr. Chair, if
yes,
I could...
Yes, Representative Tilbury.
It really is the fairness piece that we're talking about. I'm not so sure in 2003, when they came up with the formula that they came up with, that there was as much time put into it as necessary to make it fair for all. I think that just came under, we got to get something done quickly because we got to pass this budget. So when I think of your question, I think of, how long has it been that it's been unfair to cities like Fridley for how many years? And so then I think, well, if you can't, you can complain about it all you want. I've heard all kinds of complaints about LGA from every single city in my district every time I visit the city council meetings. And so rather than complain and not do anything about it and hope somebody fixes it, we had people that came together and came up with a proposal that doesn't necessarily just look at Fridley's situation as Representative Anderson pointed out.
Yeah,
so I thought that was a fair way to go.
Appreciate that, Representative Hilbert. Representative Lanny, I know you're next on the list, but Ms. Dalton wants, if she could say just a couple things on this formula and so forth, if that's all right. Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's actually not on this formula in specifics, but it is about why all of these things are labeled preliminary. We did not get the final data necessary to do a baseline 2009 LGA projection under current law until yesterday afternoon. And so that was finished yesterday afternoon, so all of these have been modeled since yesterday afternoon. If you notice, I think the last one actually has like a 10:30 p.m. time on it. Because of that, none of these runs actually got to any of the representatives and the people they've been working with prior to this, so it hasn't gone through our normal review process. So one of the reasons Fridley is a big loser is that we now have...
Ms. Dalton. Ms.
Under my run...
Okay, yes, rewind the tape on that one. We want to make sure the mayor and the manager doesn't leave here.
No offense, we understood.
There have been changes in tax bases between 2008, which is the data that they have been working on, and 2009, particularly as it related to the utility property. There has been increases in LGA, which changes the average tax rate that is used in all of these formulas, and there have been changes in the population estimates as well. So none of these numbers are going to match the numbers that you see the other groups bring forward because they were working off of pay 2008 data.
There you go. Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tilbury, there was a lot of time and effort put into the LGA issue in 2003, and obviously it's open for debate as to whether those changes were correct or not, but I wanted to ask about this handout. Is this related to your bill, Representative Tilbury, or somebody else's?
I'm not sure what that is.
Who did this come from? Oh, this from...
I'm not sure looking at that which runs those were. We have our runs, and
okay.
Ms. Dalton has her runs. I assume Ms. Dalton the runs that
all right. I don't know, Representative Lanning.
I
don't know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, this run that's marked draft at the very top is actually the Burnsville... I am sorry.
The city manager is Bill Burns, and I'm constantly doing this. Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, this is Fridley's run based on the 2008 data, and this was the analysis that they did bringing the bill, in developing the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from members? Anything else you want to make some last statements there, Representative Tilden?
Just the last statement that I have is just to reiterate that, you know, when there comes a time where you can complain about your situation, and then there's a time to put together a proposal to try to fix it. And that's what I compliment the team here that spent a lot of time working on something that it does affect all of us and is a good fairness piece. So I just wanted to reiterate that.
Representative Silver, I want to thank you and all the members who brought forward bills today and all the testifiers, because this is a great debate to have. I mean, you know, it's, nothing's perfect, and, you know, we need to make sure that it is fair. You know, exactly what that means, but, you know, and time has been spent, as Representative Lanning said, you know, we can argue over the formula, and certainly, you know, there's no formula is going to be perfect, but, you know, at that time, as they put things together and spent a lot of time with it, they thought, okay, this is going to measure things. With 854 cities, there's going to be, you know, problems. So that's what we're here for, is to, and I think the effort started last year to really start looking at, you know, what type of a formula do we have that meets all of these various needs, and maybe we don't include some factors that should be included, and maybe some that aren't, you know, and so it is a matter a little bit of how you gauge all that. But thank everyone for bringing these forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll renew the motion to lay over House File 4122 for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. Thank you very much. So thank you, Mayor.
And I just want to make one last final comment, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that I came to recognize and as a fairness or lack thereof piece was outstate communities, and I don't fault any of our communities in the metro area or outlying or whatever. They all have needs, I'm sure. Different needs, but nonetheless needs. One of the numbers that really set in my mind was the fact that outstate, about $210 per person is given under LGA. That the metro communities, like Fridley and those around the south, Minneapolis and St. Paul, excluding Minneapolis and St. Paul, but all the metro cities receive on average about $10 or $11. And I thought that was just such an astronomical disparity.
And Mayor, I'm not at this time, but I could show you all sorts of statistics on what 1% of levy brings per capita versus from rural cities versus from metro cities. So there's two sides of that one. But we're not going to do that today. So, thank you very much. We have some minutes here to approve of Friday, March 14th. Do I hear a motion to approve the March 14th minutes? Representative Loeffler moves the March 14th, 2008 minutes. In discussion? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion does prevail. This time I'm going to turn over the chair to Vice Chair Brown.
Representative Marquardt, would you like to move your bill?
I would like to move House File 3756 for possible inclusion.
And you have an author's amendment?
And I also like to move the A1 amendment, which corrects from wage and salary to number of employees, which is very important to the bill.
Okay. So you have an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that you'd like. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and do appreciate this discussion today on local government aid. I couldn't imagine
spending a day talking about anything else. But so it's very good. But House Bill 3756 is truly a compromise bill. In fact, it's been called a unity bill because of all the various city groups that have come together on this. Last spring, as all of us in this division were, you know, looking at local government aid and other ways to provide property tax relief, we heard a lot of the discussion that we're hearing today about the formula and so forth, and how do you, you know, get this to be fair and so forth. And so the division kind of put out a charge to these groups to say, get together and try to put something together, and if you can put something together, come on back, and we're going to discuss this and consider this. And so this is what this bill does. It is a consensus of several groups, which I'm going to name in just a second. But wasn't it the wizard who told Dorothy to go out and find the, get the ruby red slipper and then come back and he would send her home? Well, he didn't expect she would get that ruby red slipper, but these groups did bring back the ruby red slipper, so here I am proposing this bill, but I am honored to do that and pleased to be carrying this bill, and I do want to list all the groups that have come together on this formula. It is the League of Minnesota Cities, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities, the Municipal Legislative Commission, the Minnesota Association of Small Cities, the North Metro Mayors Association, the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools, and the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I do want to sincerely thank all of these groups for working together and coming up with a plan, at least a point that we can start debate on. I'm going to go over just a couple of the major things that this bill does, and then we have a number of testifiers and also Mr. Steve Peterson to give more of the details if those are needed. But this does provide property tax relief. Another thing it does, it brings all the groups together with one formula. Instead of having seven or eight different formulas, it does bring groups together for one formula. Probably the biggest change in it is that it eliminates regional center aid for the statewide measure of overburden. You know, that's one of the reasons there's extra money pumped into the system for regional centers is because, you know, a lot of people usually from out of town come in and work. There's extra demand on services and so forth. So it replaces that overburden factor with a job-based aid. And it ends up doing a number of things and does address some of these inner-ring suburbs, which we've heard comments about. It does double the small city aid for cities that are under $5,000 from $6 to $12 per capita. It increases the local government aid number by $90 million and then also has an inflationary factor of a minimum of 2.5 to 5% a year. It does freeze this allocation for 2 years. So whatever you would get in 2009 would be also frozen for 2010. And with the idea that there would be a group to do an LGA study formula that would have to be completed by December of 2010. You know, there are some, I want to bring up to you right now, there is Elk River is also here, and they take a big hit in this bill of about over $600,000. So certainly if we move forward with this, we need to really address that issue. I guess some might be asking about $90 million, you know, I mean, you know, why $90 million? A little bit of review is that in 2003, there was a $150 million cut permanently to local government aid. Back in 2005, $48 million of that was restored, but as far as LGA, we're still down about $102 million a year, and if you were to put just inflation in there, that comes to almost $190 million we're down a year. And if you put in the total from 2002 to 2008 or 2003 to 2008, the actual losses from that $587 million that was certified for 03, It's about $728 million of lost property tax relief to cities around the state. So we have several testifiers, and I would like to go to them first, if they would, and then come back. And I think we have Mayor Ryback here. Okay, well, a couple mayors. Reedy is also here, so go ahead and introduce yourselves. And
I'm Mayor R.T. Ryback. I'm here with Mayor Adele Breedy of Rochester and Mayor Steve Cook of Hutchinson with your Wizard of Oz connection. I'm not sure who's the Cowardly Lion, the Tin Man, or the Scarecrow, but we have gone through a pretty big yellow brick road here together. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today. One of the things that you have to do as the legislature, and I think this past hour has illustrated it, is that you have to hear many different voices, and you have to balance the interests of those. The good news is that we've done some of that work for you. Over these last months, we have worked together, city, suburb, rural, ex-urban, Republicans, Democrats, Independents. We frankly don't know what political parties most of us come from. What's so powerful about it is that we have come together and said that the local government aid formula is extraordinarily important, not only for us in our positions as mayors and city council members, but also even more important for citizens throughout the state, because it represents the most basic services you have: police, fiber, roads, bridges, property taxes. That's what local government aid is about. And so we come forward with a proposal that that the representative appropriately calls the unity proposal, because it does represent us doing our best to try to balance the interests throughout the state and talking through what the goals should be. We should start by thanking you, however, because this committee and this legislature has recognized that in 2003 the state dramatically and radically redrew the relationship between cities and the state with the local government aid cut. You acknowledged that in the last session of the legislature. We deeply appreciated that work. You passed on change on that in your bill that was vetoed by the governor. Had that not happened, we would have moved forward with what would have been the restoration of some of the damage that has been done to local governments. We want to thank you for that. We want to ask you to support this proposal as we move forward. One of the charts that I believe is in your handout there, you have the handouts here, and you see the two charts that we are, do you have these yet? Okay. Okay. Good. I'd like you, if you could, to turn to those very briefly, because I think what it does is illustrate the point that local governments throughout the state have really seen. On this first one, where you see the bar charts, you look at total revenue to different bodies throughout the state: state government, schools, cities, and counties. And you look at during that period of time, total revenue to the state has gone up 7.1%, it's declined 3.5% to schools, but down 11.5% to cities, and even further, 12.5% to counties. And so what you begin to see there is that while all groups have had difficulty during this period of time, cities have had a significant challenge. And if you turn to the second chart, you see this one with the bars on here? What that does is illustrate what Representative Marquardt just talked about, which is the significant cut to the aid formula in real dollars and in inflationary dollars. What we have in this case is this proposal does request an additional $90 million for this formula that remains below the level that it had been at before, and it is about $110 million below what it would be inflation adjusted, even if this passes. So we think those are important points as part of this. In Minneapolis itself, our story is a magnified version of what's happened throughout the state. The numbers are larger, the story is the same in other cities. In Minneapolis, the state aid cut in 2003 cut $37 million from the city. Our general, was about 13% of our general fund. That was done mid-year, mid-budget, and required us, like governments throughout the state, to move very radically to cut 13% from the budget in mid-year. In 2005, $2 million of that was restored. The actions that were taken by the legislature last year would have restored $13 million of that $37 million, but of course that was cut by the governor. That story, as I say, has large numbers in the city of Minneapolis, but as I've talked with mayors and council members throughout the state, it's the same story that you see throughout the state. In conclusion, I just want us to go back to the point of what local government aid really represents. for all of our constituents, whether we be legislators or mayors. The constituents that we have look for local government aid for basic services, police, fire, roads and bridges, and property tax. That's really what it's about. This committee, and Chair, I thank you so much, especially for your work in recognizing that property taxes are a serious challenge throughout this state. So is public safety. So are roads and bridges. And so the best single way that this body can address all those issues, property taxes, public safety, roads and bridges, is by restoring the aid that was cut so radically. We're pleased to come here today with a way to do that that brings many, many people throughout Minnesota together.
Mayor Brady.
Thank you, Representative Brown and members. Good morning. My name is Ardell Brady. I'm the mayor of Rochester, Minnesota, and serve on the League of Minnesota Cities Board of Directors. I think we're still trying and hopeful that we'll find the yellow brick road so we can go forward. I want to thank Representative Marquardt for carrying our bill and holding this important hearing this morning. And thanks also for using creditable data in your background information, the League of Minnesota Cities publication. So that was very nice. When you were in Rochester, I told the Rochester situation, but today I'm going to highlight the true unity aspect of this bill. All of our groups coming together on a plan with a single bill is pretty historic. LGA is very important to many cities across the state and a critical component of the state and local partnership. Having cities come to this kind of consensus is a recognition that the current formula does not work for many of our cities and needs fixing. As you know, last year's tax bill contained an LGA study. The tax bill was vetoed, but the League convened city groups to start this work anyway, knowing that this is a big issue for our members. The city groups met several times during the interim to come up with the proposal in front of you today. As a board member, I can tell you they have all worked very, very hard, brainstormed a ton of ideas in this process, and really listened to each other's needs as groups of cities. The result is a bill that helps cities across the state of Minnesota, and I thank you for your consideration and approval of this. This time I'd like to call on Tom Goodwin to come up and give his comments.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask the testifiers here that I would like to, in about 4 minutes, go to questions by the members here, and then I'll call up Steve Peterson at that time. So, basically, I would like everyone to get a chance to say if you support it, or, and all those who work, but if you keep that to about 30 seconds, so we can get through about, so very quickly, just so we know, give faces to the groups and so forth, that have, I think we've heard kind of the overall synopsis of things, so just if you could keep it very short, but so we can see who you all are, so please proceed.
And can you say your name for the
table? Yeah, we can do this within 30 seconds. My name is Tom Goodwin, and I'm the president of the Metro Cities Association. We have 139 cities in the metro area, and I do represent about 86 of them. And I'd like to talk about the different kind of cities we have in the metro cities. We have four distinct groups. One group you've heard about, St. Paul, the mayor was here, and St. Paul and Minneapolis, I look as very distinct. I think they've been hurt very badly by LGA cuts, like help them in any way they can. We have another group that I represent, City of Apple Valley. We don't get any LGA. We're not looking for LGA. We're doing pretty well. If we ever do institute, you ever get back to a full formula, maybe cities such as Edina and Apple Valley and Burnsville can be part of that again. But right now, we're not, and we're not asking for anything under this bill. But we're very concerned about another group of our suburbs. And we have a group, we've heard about them here, first and second ring suburbs that need help badly. I think they need help just as badly as anybody else states. And I hesitate to mention, sometimes they're happy when I mention, sometimes they're not happy. But there's a group, and I think we all know who they are. These folks need help. And so if there's going to be a redesign of the formula, and there's going to be a fund that's going to help the out-of-state cities, please keep in mind that we have that first and second tier group of suburbs that need, they're in that same category, they need help just as badly. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Mike Gamash. I'm the mayor of the city of Andover. I'm also a vice president of North Metro Mayors Association. Just to follow up, the North Metro Mayors Association has been working diligently on this unity bill, and we're very happy that we're getting this opportunity today just to speak with you. As the city of Andover, as the mayor of the city of Andover, we do not get LGA as well, but we understand the need. Some of the things that Councilmember Goodwin was saying of other cities, inner ring suburbs, and bringing all of these people together has really made a bill, I think, that's going to do what we need to have done. Quickly, there's one issue that I would like to address, because the city of Andover is right in the middle of our budget process for 2009, and things are getting a little more difficult than they were in the past for a growing city like ours. The housing crisis is devastating all areas. There's basically no residential growth going on in our city at this time, and that hasn't happened in years, decades probably. The one issue that I would like to make sure, and I understand that this committee has already expressed not having much interest in it, but if we ever go back to the concept of levy limits, it would be devastating to cities at this point in time with the crisis that we're in. But sticking to the LGA thing, we're very happy. The North Metro Mayors has worked hard on this bill with other organizations, and we think we've come up with something that can serve the entire state. Thank you.
Thank you.
We are up to 11:20, so keep very short. I know there's a few more that may want to, if you just come up and say yes or no. All right, please proceed, Mayor.
I'm Mayor Steve Cook with the City of Hutchinson, but I also represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And again, like everybody else, we're very supportive of this. We understand from our city, you know, we have to provide, being outstate cities, some unique services in addition to the basic services. Maybe it's libraries or sewer systems, airports or cemeteries. But, you know, so we've had to watch things just like everybody else. And over the years now, since the cuts in 2003, we've had to tighten our belts, like the metro cities, also raise some taxes, reduce services, things like that. So this is very important for our cities. But we also recognize the issues of the metro cities and the inner ring cities. So that's why we support this bill and hope that it goes forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Anyone else care to speak for again this time? Okay. Thanks. No, that's very good.
My name is Stephanie Clensing. I'm the mayor of the city of Elk River, Minnesota, and I want to thank Representative Marquardt for allowing us to come and speak for just a few seconds. I know he's wanting this to move along very quickly. You will notice in the bill that's being presented that the city of Elk River is a big loser. We are not losers in the city. We are not losers, but we're losing greatly with the bill. Absolutely. There you go. Thank you very much. And we need to mention that to you, because we're talking about this being a unity bill, that all the cities have come together, all the city groups have come together and said that this is the bill. And it may be, I guess I can't even judge that, but for the city of Elk River, I can tell you that this would be devastating. We would lose almost 5% of our revenues. We have been a city that has been very responsible in controlling our growth. Also, efficiency in government. We have actually had the opportunity to keep taxes stable for the 10 years that I have been mayor. We have actually had a reduction in taxes in the last couple of years, very minimal, not because our revenues are so great that we can go ahead and spend everything that we can possibly get and even beyond what we get, but it's because we have been very careful of planning our growth and planning our budgets to the point where we are a very efficient city, but to have this happen to us at this point would be devastating for our taxpayers. This is even with $90 million being added to the system, and that's what the bill is asking to have happen. The city of Elk River would lose 85% of their LGA to the tune of about $600,000. So Representative Marquardt has promised us that he would be he's going to look at this and be very good about making sure that the city of Elk River is not hurt to this extent. And so I just trust that that's the case, and I just ask you, please, make sure that the city of Elk River is not a huge loser in this, that we are also treated equitably, and that we can be unified, and we can join the rest of the cities in this unity bill if that was the case. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Mr. Marquardt, do you have a
question?
And I think we're watching the clock.
I'm open to questions, and if Steve Peterson would join me at this. So.
Thank you. That would be great.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, I wanted to ask Clemson, why are we picking on you? What causes the formula to...
Okay. Well, actually, our finance director from the city of Elk River is here, and I know that he has analyzed it to a certain extent, too. So if he can be available for questions, that would be good.
Madam Chair, we could have Steve Peterson here. He has more of the intricacies of this bill. Thank you very much, and
Mr.
can answer
Peterson.
Those questions.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Peterson. I'm with Flaherty and Hood. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and today the League of Minnesota Cities, North Metro Mayors, the Metro Association, the Minnesota Association of Small Cities, Minneapolis, and St. Paul. The reason, to answer just so directly to your question, the reason that we're picking on Elk River wasn't on purpose. What occurred is there were two parts of the formula that were outside that need-minus-effort portion. The need-minus-effort is, that regression analysis that everyone likes to complain about, and the effort is your tax base. We generally left that alone. We made one small modification, which I'll get to, but that was generally left alone. There were two parts of it outside of that, which was the regional center aid and the small city aid. The regional center aid, which went to all cities over 10,000, over 10,000 in the year 2000 outside the seven-county metro area, which is kind of an arbitrary line that was drawn. We said, if you're outside the seven counties and you're above 10,000, you're a regional center. The city of Alexandria, which I think everyone would agree is a regional center as much as any of them, was at 9,800 and something at that time, does not receive regional center aid. The city of Elk River, which is just outside the seven-county metro area, received the regional center aid because they were outside the seven-county metro area and above 10,000 in the year 2000. So what we did is we took that pot outside of there and we wanted to create a little more criteria to it, which is why we then said, well, we're going to make it based on a factor that measures overburden or a snapshot of overburden, which was jobs per capita. And if you think about it, if you have a lot of jobs compared to your population, you're going to have more services during the day, you're going to have wider streets. And we said we're going to apply that to all cities over 5,000. So it doesn't matter where you are in the state, as long as you're over 5,000, we're going to have this measure of overburden. Well, when we did that, we also said that need minus effort portion of it, we're going to count that tax base. Because you have a strong tax base and a lot of jobs, you're not going to receive this overburden. Like Bloomington has the highest jobs per capita or close to it, but they have a lot of tax base in part because of it. On the other hand, a city like Fridley has a lot of jobs per capita but doesn't have that tax base to go with it, so they're going to get some more of this because of this overburden. Elk River was receiving, and that was the only aid that they were receiving, was the regional center aid for the last 3 years, and it was just given regardless of tax base. And when we put a criteria on measure of overburden, the jobs per capita, they do not have a lot of jobs per capita. And so when we added that with including their tax base in it, that's why they took the hit. So basically, when we put some criteria on there to measure overburden and to look at the tax base, they took a hit in that regard. I hope that made sense.
Madam Chair, and I think you explained a lot of the bill just in that. So just any questions?
One more thing?
Sure.
Yeah. Madam Chair. Yeah. We also did the same thing with the small city aid. When we doubled that from 6 to 12, that used to go to cities regardless of tax base as well. And what we allow is that need minus effort portion to go below zero, and then you add on the small city aid or the job space aid. So if you have a strong tax base, North Oaks, which currently receives the small city aid, would no longer receive small city aid. So we did that as well. The only modification we made to that need minus effort portion of the formula is we said that there is a minimum revenue need that you have, which is $290 per person. Currently, the formula, when you do that regression, says that a city could have a need as low as $186 per person of revenue, which no city runs at. So we put in kind of a minimum there to say $290 and that need portion of the formula. With that,
are there any other questions? Representative Earhart?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just was curious as if you've discovered $90 million lying around anywhere.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, we're looking very, very diligently for extra dollars. You saw how creative the tax chair was last week with that where she found some money, so you never know.
Are there any, is there any other testimony from the audience? Representative Marquardt, you can close up.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. And, of course, local government aid is a very, very important matter. It's the lifeblood for those lower property-based cities that need that. And I think the more we can get a system that meets all of the needs of the state, and I think as years go on, we identify more needs and where things need improvement. The more we can do that, the fairer the system becomes, the more legitimate the system becomes, and the more the system of local government aid can be protected. And so I think, and I really, again, want to close with thanking all of these groups for coming together. I think this is great, and it really sets a strong foundation for our movement as we move ahead with local government aid. So just appreciate the support.
Okay. Representative
Dietrich? Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Marquardt, I'd like to thank you for bringing this bill forward. I think it's a very, I think this is the fair bill, to be quite honest, no offense to Fridley. And since we've started the little theme here of, I'll just say there's no place like home. And our homeowners are in trouble. They are really suffering. And when I look at all the things, and this is not a metro, urban versus rural, I think all of the homeowners in the state, to a certain extent, are hurting. We've got the housing crisis, the no growth, which the mayor talked about. Our seniors are really struggling. They're looking at things like reverse mortgages and refinancing with not even knowing which direction they're going, just to stay in their homes. I am really concerned about that, the stability of home ownership in this state right now. And you know, when you, this bill is you get great mileage out of it. It affects the most amount of cities that I have seen any of the other proposals do, and I think in a very fair, calculated way. Next best thing would be giving direct relief to property homeowners, and we tried that last year, and that also got vetoed. So I really feel like this is not the best case scenario, is giving the money to the cities and hoping they can keep down property taxes. But obviously, as I mentioned, our property tax relief proposal got vetoed, and I think this is the next best thing to keeping people in their homes and keeping our cities viable and the property values at a stabilizing in a very unstable time. So I thank you very, very much for bringing this forward. And whatever we can do to help find that $90 million to get this passed, I would be in favor of. Is it $90 million or $70
million?
90. Thank you. So thank you. I just wanted to say that.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have two questions. Now, I'm reading in the report it goes up to $575 million. Is that correct? Representative Martin.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. Yes, it's a $90 million increase.
Okay, but then goes up to $575
million. No, $485 or $484 to $595.
Okay. $584
or $585.
Yeah.
All right.
Or $575.
Representative
Anderson.
And then, thank you, Madam Chair. Just listening to Representative Dietrich, it brought to mind, have you got some kind of guarantee from this group of cities that they will then hold down property taxes, or, you know, what kind of good faith effort are they looking to do as far as property tax relief?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, as you know, we don't put specific ties to any of the local government aid dollars, but studies have shown that local government aid does produce property tax relief. It's not dollar for dollar, because not only does it provide property tax relief, but also helps fund inflated costs for streets and police and fire and that type of thing. There's no doubt that it is a huge property tax relief mechanism. And so I have no doubt that if $90 million additionally was put into the system, that there would be additional property tax relief.
Representative Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Marquardt, you've heard me say this before. I'm kind of a broken record when it comes to this issue, but cities like mine, like the city of Plymouth, doesn't receive any LGA, and so they won't be seeing any property tax relief from this bill. I think that I saw in your run, too, that my other city, Medicine Lake, actually received a hit, which I was surprised by. But this bill, if you can keep that, and I know you've heard me say it many times before, but just if you can keep that in mind, too, that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, you bring up a great point in going back to what Representative Dietrich said. That's why any time we do a property tax relief, you know, we've got enough money to do that. You know, the Homestead Credit State refund that we had has to be part of the mix also, because that then gets specific dollars to those areas that don't receive the local government aid. So anytime you do a property tax relief package, you do have a mix of all sorts of things, school equalization and so forth, but you bring up a good point.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other bills that we had before us today assume level funding. And you really get to see what kind of gyrations there may be with the change in the formula. And I assume that there's not been a run on this bill without additional funding. And maybe some of the folks who think this formula changes to their benefit may see something different if you assume no additional funding. So I think we need to... You've got two issues at stake here. One is the additional funding, which I think all of us would like to see, but you've also got the changes in the formula, and I think to really give a fair analysis of these changes and the effect of these changes, we need a run that doesn't assume additional funding so that you can really make some comparisons with the other bills we have.
Representative Lanning, the way that this bill is worded, it is worded that if you were to do this bill, it is calculated off of a $90 million increase, regardless if you had, you know, $0 increase or a $45 million increase. And let's just say you had a $40 million increase, for the sake of argument. If you had $90 million increase and you were going to get $1 million, at $45 million increase, you would get roughly $500,000, because it's based off of the idea of the increase from your 2008. So if you are at $0 and you put this bill in, you would be roughly at 2008. There would be some modifications because of the TAC and aid offset, but you'd be roughly at $2008.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you. So if I understand you correctly, that across the board there would really be no change in the current LGA for all the cities in various categories. Is that what you're saying?
With the exception of Representative Brown and Representative Lane, with the exception of the cities that are the high wealth, small value cities, and the regional center that loses money, Elk River, the remaining cities would see a small uptick, but would be roughly what they received in 2008.
Madam Chair, I'd like to add to that.
Marquardt.
Of the new dollars, 53% of the new dollars would go to the metro area and 47% would go to the rural area. And so if we were to add all of that, we're currently the mix of 64% greater Minnesota, 36% metro. With the new dollars, it would be actually 61% rural and about 39% metro. It changes that a little bit, because there are more dollars going to some of these inner ring suburbs that tend to have the jobs factors and so forth. So there's a little bit of a shift there. And I think so that's really beneficial in the long term to rural Minnesota, is that I think the more you can make a system fair and include the cities that really have the need, the stronger the program is in the future and the better that it gets protected into the future. So there's a little bit of that, and that's, you know, one of the reasons why I appreciate the work that these groups did, because it's like they kind of looked at what are the areas of need and didn't really look at geographically who from past who tend to benefit in that. So, but yeah, there would be certainly Representative Lanning a little bit of a shift there.
Representative Hart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The money that provides that local government aid comes primarily from the cities who don't get little or no local government aid, like Representative Anderson's city. And if you want to provide relief for all of those people in both kinds of cities, you're better off using direct relief in the circuit breaker. An enhanced circuit breaker would do more for those folks who are in trouble with their mortgages and so forth than local government aid.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Peterson, I understand it correctly that if there were less than $90 million, which, you know, would be nice to have lots of dollars around in this table for all kinds of things, but my understanding is that sort of the Unity Coalition perspective is that it ought to be then proportional based on this formula as opposed to looking at another way of dealing with things, that there's some consensus around that approach as well.
Representative Brown, Representative Loeffler, correct. The bill is drafted so that it can be scaled back proportionally from what the increase would be.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, the proposal is for $90 million, and certainly if it goes down a lot, I mean, it's, you know, I don't know how that would factor in the support and so forth, but it is somewhat scalable in that regard.
Madam Chair and Mr. Marquardt, I mean, I know how tough it is to get a diverse group to agree to anything, having done that once in my career long ago. But it does, you know, it's important to know whether that agreement holds, given different circumstances and different sort of priorities, because coalitions are delicate. And, you know, there's a lot of needs that confront this committee. And I think as we get our fiscal targets, we're just going to have to kind of balance out, mm-hmm. you know, all the competing needs here and just to see where it comes.
Representative Marquardt, you do get the closing comments.
Madam Chair, I already thought I really had them, but again, I just want to thank everyone involved with putting this bill together. So thank you, Madam Chair.
House File 3756 is held over for possible inclusion in the report, and we are adjourned.